Football Weekly Extra.
Football Weekly Extra, extended Champions League final special. As Barca put the ole and Sir Alex's men the limp into Olympico, we salute Guardiola's treble winning team and point out that when a Christian meets a Lionel in Rome, history says there can only be one winner. Elsewhere, the Premier League, Burnley join England's top flight and Abu Dhabi millions get pumped into Pompey. That blur you can see is Harry Redknapp heading back to the South Coast. There's posts, poached eggs and the climax of the Italian season. And our big countdown to Saturday's FA Cup final. Will it be a swan song for the goose or Moyes the merrier? All that coming up in Football Weekly Extra. Hello, everybody, and hello, Jay Schwartz, who wrote to us this week, could the very funny Rob Smythe appear in the pod sometime again? It's always enjoyable to listen to, but he's hardly ever there. Detto fatto, as they say, Jay Schwartz, because Mr. Chalk himself, Rob Smythe, welcome on board.
Hello, James.
Chalk white today after a big night out, Rob.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. Oh, we appreciate you being here. Indeed. And we appreciate Barry Glendinning being here.
Hello.
Hi, Barry.
Nobody on the blog wanting me to be here. Just
oh, everybody wants you to be here. And all those people tweeting you on your Twitter stream, whatever it is, thing. And Sean Ingle, who's also on Twitter.
I am indeed, James.
Right. How are you today, Sean?
I'm very well, thank you.
Great. That's fantastic news. Item one, Champions League final. What a performance from Barcelona. Barry, how much did you make?
I made a decent, modest sum of money.
Right. You enjoyed the evening.
I did enjoy it very much. Barcelona were 2-1 to right. win the game, which I thought was an absolutely ridiculous price. But so I weighed it in. It's my usual aplomb. And I mean, there's going to be a lot of reporters and media pundits and whatnot on Fleet Street and elsewhere looking very, very stupid this morning, because a lot of them seem to think that Barcelona don't like it up and Manchester United were going to win. It was only a matter of how much Manchester United were going to win by. And I have remained mystified as to what these guys were basing their assumptions on. I can only assume they were basing it on this, the only two games they've seen Barcelona play this season, which were against Chelsea. I'm lucky enough to have time and to and Sky to watch Barcelona play most weekends. Huh. And for me, it was a question of how much they beat Man U by, not if they would beat them.
Right. Well, now that they've seen Barcelona at their finest, they'll be eating their words,
well, I don't
short,
think Barcelona
like a kid
were at
with
the
a plate of alphabet
night.
Spaghetti.
Do you think? Very good. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it was that unrealistic for people to, for an English newspaper journalist to tip an English team that had won won a couple of trophies already this season. Also, Barcelona are out without three of their first choice defenders, and they did look shaky for the opening 8-10 minutes or so. But I think this whole ploy of tiki-taka, the quick jab and move passing between particularly Iniesta and Xavi, I mean, it worked for Spain during the 2008. It meant, because they kept possession so much, they protected the defence, and it certainly worked last night. What amazed me was how tired and lethargic United looked. I mean, even after sort of early in the second half, there was no cover at all for the defence. They were just shocking, really.
The problem is, United picked a team not to be behind in the game, and they went behind early, and you go behind to Barca, you're in all sorts of trouble. They had no real... You look suddenly, you're chasing a goal, you've got Park, Giggs, who aren't really attacking threats as much as you would like. And I think they were tired just because a combination of the heat, and they just chased the ball. People talk about Barca not having a plan B, but with that 11, United didn't have a plan B. It was picked purely to sit deep, to score the first goal. When they conceded the first goal so early, they had no chance.
Let's just get a couple of postal reactions. Oleguer, our friend in Vienna, says, "My mates and fellows from the Guardian podcast, could you please serve Mr. Honigstein some piece of pie, humble flavour, I suspect, for his remarks about the most one-sided final in history and 3-0 to Manchester United?" That was Rafa's prediction on Monday. Equalex was suggesting that I said that the only discussion was how many goals we're going to win by. I said that's what the talk was in the media, Equa Alexa.
I just think the media were gripped by this collective delusion that strikes whenever, say, England are going off to play in a major championships and they decide that we're going to win. There's no evidence to suggest that this is going to happen. But
I think the Arsenal game was a large
created, that whipped up a lot of that, but that enthusiasm.
Arsenal game, see, I think a bit like last night, the Arsenal game hadn't formed when United were 2-0 up. Nothing had happened. So, and by then, they had such a lead that they could sit and pick Arsenal off and look imperious, when in fact they were just aided by two freak goals. And the same kind of happened last night. The game hadn't formed when United went behind, and that dictated everything else that followed.
Right. A couple more posts. Winter says, bloody hell, if that was Barca's second string team with five first teamers missing or playing out of position, then what would their first team have been like? Blunt Guardian says, what does the pod think? Is this the first time that the cup winners are the team that played the most attractive football throughout the Champions League? I think so. Pato, meanwhile, says...
Well, hang on a second, James. Yeah. I mean, you could argue, you know, 1999, United probably played the most attacking football.
Barcelona.
Certainly 2006, Barcelona did.
Right, okay.
No. I think that's absolute poppycock,
so, should we chop
to be honest.
One,
well, no, we could, you know, we might as well, you know, we get slated when we get it wrong, so...
Blunt Guardian. Pato, Ferguson definitely got his formation wrong. It was pretty clear from the first half, United needed more bodies in midfield to break up Barcelona's passing, as they were moving the ball at will. Instead, Ferguson brings off midfielders for even more attackers.
That's Cristiano Ronaldo posting as Pato.
The
role of Giggs was wrong, I think, because... Right. I thought he would sit deep with Carrick and Anderson would get tight and Xavi and Iniesta. And in fact, Giggs played in the hole, and when he does that, he's wishy-washy, he does nothing. So I think in that respect, I agree that they needed an extra body in the centre midfield.
Right, well, Cristiano Ronaldo agrees with both of you. As he was generous enough to point out afterwards, it was the tactics that were not good. Everything went wrong. And is he going to be there at Old Trafford next year? I don't know.
And I don't care. And I'd say lots of other people increasingly don't care either. He's a pain in the arse. Just get rid of him.
It's difficult.
The trouble is that we've got up a whole 3 or 4 months of this, haven't we? Seesawing like a bloody rowing boat in a storm, this way and that. And really, just wish just to have some closure on it. Because we've been going on for the last 3 summers now. And
it's like Vieira. It used to happen every year.
There must be something better to do last summer than have bloody him and
Real
Madrid.
I can think of nothing I'd rather do with my summer than wonder whether Gareth Barry is going to Liverpool, Xavi Alonso is going to Arsenal, or Cristiano Ronaldo is going to Real Madrid. It's just incredibly tedious, but it's the life we've chosen, Shawnee, and we have to stay on top of all this rubbish.
Rob, so as a desolate United fan this morning, who are you pointing your big finger of blame at?
I think it's one of those where there are slight recriminations. I think Giggs was used wrongly, and I think they were really unlucky with the timing of the first goal, and also it was sloppy. But generally, great teams are allowed to play well. It's not humiliating to be outclassed by a truly great side.
Well,
a side who keep the ball as well as anyone ever, I think. And I just think you can't really complain about that.
I see some of the Chelsea fans on our blog were magnanimous in their praise for Barcelona in their time of glory. They're still whinging and moaning about having been put out and the injustice that befell them in the semi-final. But the best team was being crowned champions in Manchester United. Need not be ashamed of
as
being
L'Equipe,
beaten by a team that
could. As L'Equipe put it today, I was going through the European papers for a little video piece we'll be doing later. They said Europe has a champion that they can be proud of.
Don't you think it's something wrong with our culture, though? That, you know, I remember after the first leg, particularly, and perhaps after the second as well, the Chelsea-Barcelona game, everyone was saying, oh, Barcelona, rubbish. Now everyone's gone completely the other way. They're saying Barcelona, hail, are the greatest team ever. I mean, there's more flip-flopping than a Brazilian advert for sandals. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
And there will be now all this soul-searching, we're not sophisticated enough, when in fact no one's as sophisticated as Barcelona. There shouldn't be any regrets. But you're absolutely right. And part of the problem is, though, that Barcelona in those Chelsea games were never ahead, and that's why it was fairly easy to contain them. Once they go ahead, you have no chance, I think.
Right, there you go. Always good to get your opinion, Rob. Now, very, very shortly, we'll be hearing from another expert, Sid Lowe, who's in Spain. Just a quick nod to the fact that you can keep up to date with all your chums from The Guardian's top football covering staff at guardian.co.uk/football. Where have you been, Sid? Who have you been talking to?
I actually haven't been anywhere. I was just stupid enough to have left my phone somewhere, and I couldn't actually find it under a mountain of newspapers.
Well, we were helping by ringing it repeatedly.
Well, that was the thing that eventually I thought, what's that noise?
Right.
And then I thought, oh, Christ, yeah, I'd left it somewhere I shouldn't have left it.
All right, hands up who believes Sid's story, because frankly, that doesn't ring true at all. No hands here, Sid. None. None hands.
None hands.
I think, Sid, you were sitting drinking a cup of tea with your phone looking at it, Ringo. They want to talk to me, but I don't care.
Thinking they can wait for me.
I'll answer when I'm good and ready.
Right. Well, okay, now that we've got you, Sid.
Yes.
Guardiola. He's a genius. Sharp suit, tactical nose. He's the Spanish Phil Brown, eh? Discuss.
Well, I think he's slightly better than Phil Brown, isn't he? And he has no silly headsets. I have to say that over the course of this season, Guardiola has, and I get ready for your obvious reactions here, Guardiola has entirely seduced me all the way through this season. Everything he's said has turned out to be right. Virtually every judgment he's made has been right. He's handled himself fantastically. Of course, the most important thing is the way the team's played, the way he's turned them around. But I think in everything he's done, pretty much he's been correct. And I'm reminded now of something that he said back in February when a few journalists were asking about Leo Messi and saying that Leo Messi is a great player, but there's things missing from his game. I mean, he can't head a ball for a start. And Guardiola turned around and said, "You want to be careful what you say about Leo Messi, because one of these days he's going to score a header and make you all shut up."
Mm. Well, it was a fantastic header as well, in off his ear, in marvellously cushioned fashion. The Italian papers, off on a tangent here, but the Italian papers seem to think that Guardiola dedicated Wednesday's victory to Italian football, Paolo Maldini, and also to Carlo Mazzoni, who's the kind of grumpy old man of Italian coaching, who Guardiola seemed to be intimating that he picked up all his tricks from. Is that true?
Well, I just don't know, because it's not something that's turned up in Spain, but I did see that myself last night when I was looking through some of the post-match press reactions.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is, for those who haven't been at a Champions League game, is of the way, obviously, the Champions League is set up. All of the rights holders get, if you like, kind of exclusive access to the managers after the game in what's known as the flash area, the flash zone. And for Guardiola, my guess is that Guardiola turned on the Pelés a little bit here. So he's gone and done an interview with the Spanish media. Yeah, wonderful, very happy. Gone and done an interview with the English media, in English, by the way, which obviously I think people have seen over the last few days. He's really quite good. And said things about Man United being a very nice side, and he's very pleased to have beaten them. And then gone and done the Italian media. And then, like Pelé, when he goes to Colombia are the next World Cup winners, goes to Italy, the next World Cup winners. And I don't know, to be honest, if Guardiola has been asked about Maldini, or if this was a genuinely heartfelt remark about Maldini. It may well be, and the reason why I say it may well be a heartfelt remark about Maldini is, and don't underestimate this, they're both, throughout their career, worn Nike and been big icons for Nike. And that will mean that they've coincided on a couple of occasions. In fact, I've been at an event where they've both been there, and they do seem to have some sort of relationship, Guardiola and Maldini. So it could well be that this was, genuinely said from the heart.
Was it getting hot in here? Was it all that talk of a relationship between Maldini and Guardiola?
I can think of one man in Italy who I'd imagine wasn't too impressed watching last night's game, and that's Jose Mourinho, who's...
Because or Jose Mourinho, as he's...
Jose Mourinho, as I should have called him. Guardiola is younger than him, better looking than him, better dressed than him, more charismatic than him, and now more successful than
Welcome
him.
Welcome to my life, sitting next to Barry Glendening.
Well, listen, the reaction, all sorts of celebrations and a bit of trouble and stuff in Barcelona, but the Spanish press, even the Madrid press, Sid, falling over themselves to hail this team that is a living demonstration that perfection exists.
Yeah, that's certainly the line that was peddled by AS this morning, one of the two main Madrid newspapers, by their editor, a guy called Alfredo Relaño. Now, Relaño has, to put this into context, had a real bee in his bonnet about the way Spain as a national team play and what he defines as Spain's style. We've talked about this before, the tiki-taka, the pass and move. And of course, his approach to this is to look at it very much in terms of Xavi Hernandez and Andres Iniesta, who last night just played the ball all game long and really didn't let Manchester United anywhere near them. And he really, in particular, is a big fan of that style of football. So yeah, he described this morning Barcelona as being that proof that perfection is possible, that you can do things in an absolutely... perfect way.
And what did the Spanish press make of Manchester United?
Well, the truth is, there's actually not been a huge amount of commentary on Manchester United, because it's really all been about Barcelona. There's been one or two little remarks, and one or two of them that are quite interesting, I quite enjoyed reading. Marca have had a go at Alex Ferguson, as you might expect, and the reason, of course, for that is, again, the context, the background to this is the fact that Alex Ferguson has been raving about Real Madrid being Franco's club every chance he gets, and Marca responded to this earlier in the year by calling him a senile old bastard and saying that he just didn't know what he was talking about and so on and so forth. And last night, they weren't very impressed with Manchester United. There is a fairly barbed remark this morning about how Ferguson isolated Rooney on the wing, left Tevez out the side, claimed that his team were going to go and attack, but did nothing of the sort, and that then his team threw in the towel right at the very, very start. And the payoff line is, maybe Alex Ferguson is not what he once was. Mm-hmm. They also, as you can probably imagine, there's a couple of little digs at Paul Scholes for that absolutely hideous challenge that he made on Sergio Busquets. And the other man that they're all talking about, inevitably, is Cristiano Ronaldo. The Madrid press have pointed out, and I think perhaps with some justification, and in fact, one of the Catalan dailies has said this as well, that Ronaldo was at least the one person in the Manchester United side who looked dangerous, who looked like he might do something. But then the Catalan paper turned around brilliantly and said, Ronaldo looks like the perfect player for Real Madrid. Because not only did he miss his chances, but he was then an arrogant, posing git who spent the right day, didn't use the word git, obviously using equivalent, who spent the rest of the game proving that he's a bad loser, that he's a chulo, is a Spanish word, which means all sorts of things, amongst them pimp, and said that he spent the rest of the game doing that. And he said, well, this just proves that he smells of Real Madrid.
Yeah. Speaking of Real Madrid, presumably this Barcelona transfer is going to make them spend some real dinero.
I think they're going to spend ludicrous amounts of cash around Madrid over this summer. They will go absolutely bonkers to get as many people in as they possibly can. I think they're starting with Kaká. They'll follow that up with Ribery. They'll then go for a couple of big-name Spanish players. And obviously the men at the top of that list at the moment are David Villa, David Silva, and Xabi Alonso. And obviously we don't yet know what's happening with that. Rafa Benitez seems to be making slightly contradictory remarks about Xabi Alonso. And then once all that's done, once all that's in place, if they believe they can do it cheaper than they currently think the fee is, they will go to Cristiano Ronaldo at some stage. But I think they'll leave that till later in the summer. I think Florentino Perez is very keen not to be seen to be buying a guy because Ramon Calderon set it up. And that's one reason why he doesn't want to do it straight away. He doesn't really want Ronaldo to be his one marquee signing. So he wants to have other marquee signings first and then go back to Ronaldo later in the year. Because I believe that Ronaldo last night said he didn't know whether he'd be at United come next season.
Indeed not. So anyway, Guardiola gets the treble, first ever Spanish manager to do that, Spanish club to do that in his first year. Amazing stuff. A quick word, Sid, if you will, on the relegation battle in this final weekend of the Liga. Five teams with, as you mentioned on Monday, their own destiny in their own hands.
Yeah, absolutely right. Betis, Valladolid, Getafe, Sporting Gijón and Osasuna all going to the final day of the weekend on Friday night, I was going to say Sunday night, of course. All of them knowing their destiny's in their hands, but all of them knowing, of course, they could be relegated next season. Mm. It will be really, really tense, I think, on Sunday night.
Crikey. Sid, magnificent stuff. Can we catch up with you on Monday, then, with the resolution of the relegation battle there in sunny Spain?
Yeah, of course we can. It should be good fun.
Excellent. Don't forget your phone this time.
I will try not to, yeah.
All right, then. Thanks.
Cheerio.
Now, in other news, moving along from Champions League final.
You don't want me to mention the tragic case of the the deaths in Nigeria.
It's hard to get the tone right on this.
I'll mention it anyway, then it's up to producer Pete whether he wants to include it. But a Manchester United fan in Nigeria killed four people earlier today when he drove into a crowd of Barcelona supporters in his minibus in Ogbo in Nigeria. Apparently they were out celebrating. According to a police spokesman, the driver had passed the crowd and then made a U-turn and ran into them. Four people have died, 10 people are injured.
They take their football seriously.
And the driver's
been
arrested.
Did an Arsenal fan not hang himself in Nigeria after the semi-finals? It's an extraordinary story, though. Absolutely extraordinary. Moving along from the Champions League final. There's been plenty of other things that are happening this week. First off, Portsmouth, Sasha Gainamak, agrees to sell Pompey to Dr. Suleiman Al-Fayyim. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is he not the bloke who just...
Yes, he is.
And doesn't that mean that they...
Yeah, it does.
So how can this possibly get past the Premier League?
He's fallen out with...
Oh, has he?
I think. I mean, my knowledge of UAE politics, United Arab Emirates politics, isn't up there. But I think he's fallen out with the guys that eventually bought Manchester City because he was talking to the press about how they're going to sign Kaká and everything else. Yeah. So I think...
They moved him out. So he's done this through his own new investment vehicle, Al-Fayyim Asia Associates, AAA. I'm not the world's greatest expert on Abu Dhabian politics, but my knowledge of the Middle East and that kind of setup is second to none. Is that generally you have a ruling royal family And anybody else who's got any money or power within that has to make sure that they kowtow to the party line. So if you have the ruling royal family of Abu Dhabi buying Man City, anybody who does anything else within that, for all that they might appear independent, has to do it within the confines of what's acceptable to ADUG. So effectively, you have a proxy ownership of a second club for ADUG. That's my understanding, but posters are very welcome to put me right about that. It's obviously... Well, on one hand, it might be seen as good news for a Portsmouth club that looked like it was disappearing back down the hill as fast as it had climbed up it. But it does raise all sorts of very uncomfortable issues. Wango Kid, great name, posting in saying, with this and Ellis Short fully taking over Sunderland, there's talk of a £200 million war chest. That was an extraordinary idea. Is this going to have a massive effect on the Premier League? Not just one big money club, potentially four: Chelsea, Sunderland, Man City, Portsmouth. Is this going to have a detrimental effect on A, the rest of the clubs, and B, the Premier League as a whole?
I think money had a detrimental effect on the Premier League an awful long time ago. Obviously, at the very top level, we get to see some of the greatest players in the world. But, you know, God, we know next season, almost certainly it's going to be the Big Four. We'll be in the Big Four positions again. We know...
Big Six, because the top six this year was the same as the top six last year.
Yeah.
I find it weird if Sunderland are going to have a £200 million war chest.
Is that true, or is I just...
Well, I don't know.
Have you heard that?
Did you not say that?
I might have dreamt it. I did just say it. Don't take that as a... I might be wrong about that. But anyway, if they were to...
Well, no, apparently they're balking at having to pay the £5 million Wigan are asking to give them Steve Bruce,
but that's
basically.
That's Steve Bruce, I think, isn't it?
Oh. And... You know, they didn't balk at playing more than £5 million for Michael Chopra, so why not just hand over the money and take Steve Bruce?
It might be his image rights that are causing the problem.
But, yeah, I mean, it's nice to have more competitive teams in the league, but, you know, I'd lose interest fairly quickly if just my team suddenly gets good because some foreigner invested millions and millions, you know, hundreds of millions of pounds.
You don't welcome Ellis Short's involvement in Sunderland, then?
Not particularly, no.
Okay.
I just...
you like clubs like Burnley.
Call me old-fashioned, but yeah, I prefer clubs like
Burnley, who made their way back to the Premier League on Monday, just after we'd done our last pod. They get £60 million for doing that. Won't get them particularly far. A, because everybody else gets that and more, and B, because they've got to spend half of it apparently on redeveloping Turf Moor. And doing all sorts of other things, like giving everybody free season tickets. What kind of madness is this?
Well, not everyone is getting free season tickets. People who bought season tickets for last season were told if we get promoted, or people who bought them by a certain time. So I think there's about £2.5 million worth of season ticket going for free this season at Burnley. But, you know, it's not that much compared to the windfall.
Fantastic stuff for them. And anybody, Burnley, Sean Ingle, do you have Burnley knowledge for us here?
No, I think it's a wonderful story. I also think John Ashdown should be praised because at the start of last season, he tipped them up as an outsider and he got slated, I think, from various bloggers. But he was right. And I think Owen Cole's done an absolutely wonderful job. They're not going to bring in foreigners. They're going to sort of roughly keep the same squad they've got now. They're probably going to go straight back down, but it'd be nice to think they could. You know, the teams they've beaten, and they've beaten Arsenal, they've beaten Spurs, they've beaten
five
Fulham.
Premier League clubs.
Yeah. Yeah. They've beaten, you know... And so let's hope they can stay up. There's certainly enough dross in the lower half of the Premier League to suggest they can.
It'll be the 50th anniversary, of course, next year of them winning the league title
in 1960,
and then going in quite clearly, and then going and then going into the European Cup. This is a former European Cup team, of course, Burnley.
It is, but I think the back in the 70s when you had teams like, you know, Forest getting up from the second division then and winning the first division and then going to Europe, that doesn't happen anymore.
That was back when football was rubbish, before it got good like nowadays.
Before 1992, Jimbo, when you came along.
Cavemen.
Manly handshakes and pats on the back after you scored a goal.
Yep. Excellent. Well done, Burnley. Rob, you got anything you want to say about Burnley?
Just that they're a really nice side to watch. They play 4-3-3 in a really interesting way. They work the wingers really well. And they're a bit like West Brom, I think, in that they might go back down, but it'll be worth watching.
All right, nice one. And the games with Blackburn especially so. Because they're only 15 minutes apart or something.
Should be fun.
Oof. You know, their centre-half, Clark Carlisle, he used to live with one of our old producer Pete.
Really?
Used to share a flat. Yeah, I think he played for QPR at the time. Oh. I think he was a bit of a drinker and a feckless gambler, but he's since been to the Sporting Chance Clinic and cleaned up his act, and he's been a stalwart in the Burnley team, playing very, very well.
If you're listening, what's our lawyer's address?
Oh no, it's nothing libelous there. It's common knowledge, and he admits it himself. So.
Right. Now,
there's talk now that Owen Coyle may be leaving Burnley and going to Celtic, which would be awful.
He's distanced himself from that.
He's distanced himself in every sense of the word, because he said he's going on holidays.
Yes.
And he's going on holidays as a Burnley manager. Mm. But he hasn't said whether he'd be returning from holidays as a Burnley manager. And, you know, I suppose the world is his oyster, and because he can either have a bash at the Premier League with Burnley or go to Celtic and have a bash at the Champions League with them. But it would be nice to see him stick with Burnley, because there's no doubt he will get Champions League experience sometime, not with them probably, but with some other club, because he seems to be very much a Tyro manager who's heading straight for the top.
You have to be careful, don't you? Because a lot of managers who take teams up ahead of schedule, like Derby 2 years ago, and Sunderland, end up getting sacked by Christmas.
Eddie Boothroyd, who was massive, people bigged him up 3 or 4 years ago.
You have to be careful in that sense. I agree that he looks a really good manager, but you never know, he could be out of a job by Christmas. Mm. I hope not.
This all came about, of course, the Celtic job thing, where Tony Mowbray is also being talked up as a possible replacement for Gordon Strachan and Slaven Bilic as well. After Strachan resigned on Monday, another of the post-pod events of Monday. Strachan going after losing the SPL title on the last day when his side drew at home to Hearts. Rangers, meanwhile, winning at Dundee. And thank you to Dave Lister, who posted in with information on Operation Tango, a brilliant sting perpetrated by 20 Rangers fans. They each decided to text two Celtic-supporting friends with the information that Dundee United had equalised 15 minutes after Rangers scored. He posts a link to saying, here's what happened, and it is quite extraordinary. You're watching the Celtic game on Stantis coverage, and suddenly this enormous roar goes up around the stadium, and the commentator goes, oh, there's a big roar here. And there's a pause while he seeks information. He says, oh, I think there's been a bit of misinformation. It completely stung the crowd. Each of the two friends then passed it on.
Speaking of Rangers, we should probably quickly point out that they're playing in the Scottish Cup final against Falkirk on Saturday. Ali McCoist apparently is actually the de facto manager for cup games, because he's been groomed to take over Walter Smith perhaps the season after next, which is amazing, because McCoist was sort of seen as almost the event secretary when Smith became manager, basically to sit down with players, have a drink, keep them happy, and it's almost like the court jester really. But he seems now he's been
his role with the Scotland squad.
Exactly. Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, that's what when he first moved into sort of the management. But now he seems to be regarded as possibly a serious manager contender of his own.
Right.
Well, I'm sorry, but I'm not one for normally saying that. Mm. Oh, I could manage a football team, because it's very difficult dealing with egos and all the money end things and transfers and training session. But I honestly think I could manage Rangers and still finish in the top two of the SPL.
Celtic?
Yeah.
Because that job's there. Celtic, if you're listening.
Well, I could do either because my dad's Protestant, my mum's a Catholic, so I'm covered.
All right, nice
either one. Way.
All right then. Thank you very much for that, Barry. And in a second or two, we'll be getting on to your post. Remember the address if you have a comment or a question, guardian.co.uk/footballweekly. And we'll have that and a look forward to the FA Cup and a bit on Italy after this.
Football Weekly Extra on guardian.co.uk.
Posts. Now, still looking for your nominations for Best Footballing Moment, Best Football Weekly Moment, Best Pun Player of the Season, and another category which seemed to be evolving last week into Most Hated Figure in Football. I have been collating the results so far, and in our last pod, which I think is the 11th, of June, we'll be going through those. Interesting, we should have a category, Best Poached Eggs Recipe, because there have been some top ones coming in. Apparently, if you haven't tried the put it in cling film parcel technique, that may have been a Rangers-esque spoof, that one, because people have tried it and posted in. The results are apparently horrible. Somebody suggests, HRH King Cole says, just take a pan of simmering water, you put your mug into the water, and then you put your egg into the mug. That's interesting, that. Could be good. Game Done Change says, for all who are interested in the perfect poached egg, the water should be 3 to 4 inches deep. It should be a gentle simmer, a bit like champagne in the way it bubbles. You add a teaspoon of malt vinegar and you put in the eggs. The fresher the eggs are, the better the result. You cook the eggs for about 2.5 minutes max. Serve on buttered toast and sprinkle with freshly cracked black pepper. Barry.
That's my favourite username on the blog, Game Done Change. It's a wire reference. Do you get it, or do you watch The Wire?
I've watched The Wire, but I don't know.
Cotty comes out of prison, and he goes back into the game. Game done change. And he goes, game done change.
Right.
Got more fierce.
What was the second bit?
It's got more fierce.
Oh, got more fierce, right. Yeah. Game done change, right, okay, good. Nice one. And good, there you go. Marty Morrissey.
Oh, quickly follow up with my second favourite username. The RTE commentator who's right. bred in
when
the
I
chart.
Was, oh, Krista Burr. Matt Hall has just popped in of Guardian, yeah, etc., with a great Christopher story, which is that he is one of only two people to go on the celebrated radio show Desert Island Discs, where you get to choose, what is it, 10 records that you would take with you to a desert island. He's one of only two people to choose only his own records. So that's Christopher for you. Marty Morrissey posting in saying he shouldn't be sniggered at. He's Argentina's most famous pop star. I refute both those assertions. Hagen 88. If only Sunderland and Hull City could start next season with a punitive points deduction for being so unspeakably lousy.
Well, they weren't as lousy as I mean, I'd have happily scrapped the Premier League, you know, 20 teams, move it to 18, or you know, let.
All right.
Yeah, but hold on now. You can't arbitrarily decide. Oh, you haven't. You know, these were the rules at the start.
But you know what they reminded me of? They reminded me of five drunks that I used to kind of pass at Kentish Town Station when I lived there. Every single day, they were just...
One of them, Rob.
I used to live in Kent, I was going to say. What year was this?
Well, kind of in the early part of the decade. They were just... Every You're single right. day, they'd be drinking their white cider. They'd be, like, swearing and fecking.
Can
Sometimes
I point
now
out,
and again, they'd start swinging punches at each other. But
can
most
I point
of the time,
out the big difference between...
They were too apathetic
right.
to actually even bother getting up after
the
their
big
own,
difference
sorry.
Between those drunks and Sunderland, Hull, Newcastle, et al. Was that those drunks had some bottle. There you go. Because it was an absolutely spineless performance on the final day.
Sunderland weren't spineless on
oh,
the final
they were.
Day.
Come
they
on.
They lost 3-2.
Right.
You could have had 25-1 and all four of those teams losing on that final day.
Could
you? And you recommended it to me before kickoff. How much did you have on a tranny?
£0.
Oh, while we're on the subject, here's time for you to make £20, Sean, because collect on your bet. This was about Tottenham to finish in the top half. And this bait was placed, crucially, before Harry Redknapp, the Messiah miracle
worker.
When
they were about 18th or 19th.
All right, and you bet that they would finish in the top half, and that's a £20 that I can
have
actually
in
physically
my hand
see.
A piece of paper.
Right. So. All right.
Thank you, Barry. It's the second year in the row that I've taken £20 off Barry.
With the same bet?
No, well, I backed Manchester City's finished in the top 10 the season before last as well. So,
what will next season's be?
We'll have to wait and see.
All right, okay.
There will be a bet. I want a chance to win my money back.
Right, now, quick mention for Italy. Final weekend there. Final weekend in France, of course. Bordeaux and Marseille scrapping for the title. Italy final weekend still to be decided on the automatic Champions League qualification place. And one relegation spot, the relegation thing is between Lecce and Regina. Oh, sorry, Lecce and Regina are already down. It's between Torino and Bologna. Bologna are 3 points higher than Torino. Bologna are welcoming Catania to the Dell'Ara, while Torino go to Rome without to face Roma without half their players after that massive bust-up at the end of their game with Genoa. The weekend, plenty of people posting in saying that the reason that all that scrap started was that Thiago Motta was putting his finger to his lips by the Torino bench just as the game came to an end. And Thiago Motta's explanation for that is the fact that people on the Torino bench had been shouting at their teammates to break his legs during the game. So when they finally took the lead 3-2 in the final minutes, he went over and went, "How about that, my friends from Torino?" But it was a disgraceful scenes. And anyway, they are currently in the pole position to go down with Lecce and Regina. The other game, the other big game, is the Milan-Fiorentina game, which basically, if Fiorentina win that game by two clear goals, they'll go into third place and get the automatic place in the Champions League. Puccin posting in on the subject of Maldini. We were talking about the descent at the Curva Sud of the San Siro last Sunday. And he's posting in that he actually was there, and there was actually, it was only a very small minority that were holding up banners that were in any way, anything but complimentary to Maldini, so much so that he didn't even realise there had been any such comment until he got home and saw it on TV afterwards. And as we mentioned, Guardiola making a point of dedicating something to Maldini this week. Now, sorry, you'll have to hold all your many Italian questions because we've got to get straight on to the FA Cup final. Which has been a bit buried, producer Pete was pointing out this morning, but been a bit buried, the FA Cup final, by, you know, the Champions League hoo-ha You know, we're still discussing Champions League, and we'll be probably for the next day or two, and then suddenly it'll be kick off at Wembley, Sean.
Well, exactly. It's an interesting file in one respect, even though because Everton have improved the last 2 or 3 years, and it'd be great for Dave Moyes and the club if they were to win a medal. I don't think it'll be a classic. There have been 2-0 draws this season between the teams. The game at Goodison may well have been the worst single game this season, only memorable for John Terry being wrongly sent off, and that's not a phrase you can utter every day of the season. But my eyes were more attracted to the gossip columns of, I think it was Metro or London Life this week. Apparently, the Chelsea's end-of-season party, Michael Essien bought himself a very special watch that was worth £80,000, was diamond encrusted, but crucially had his own face on the watch.
I bet Chris de Burr's got one of those. That's just extraordinary. £80,000.
I mean, he might have had he'd probably been down in the crystal champagne at, you know, £400 a bottle as well before he
crystal champagne and Coke. Apparently, that's the footballer's beverage of choice. Oof. You get buy really expensive crystal champagne and then drown it with Coke, destroy it.
Coca-Cola.
But apparently, in some nightclubs, they see footballers coming, so the footballers order the champagne. They pour some fizzy cava into a crystal bottle, charge them £600 for it, and they drink it, and obviously they can't tell the difference because they're all idiots.
God bless.
With more money than sense. But yeah, I couldn't walk around with an £80,000 watch.
On no, you couldn't.
For a number of reasons. A, I can't afford one. B, I'd be worried, security reasons, and C, I just...
Well, no one's going to want to take a guilty watch with Barry Glendinning on the face, or I would posit with Michael Essien.
Speaking of stupid footballers, yeah. Ashley Cole, if Chelsea win on Saturday, it'll be his fifth FA Cup triumph, which will be a record.
Wow, that's good. That's good. I was going to mention Phil Neville's monogram carpets as my footballing... Have you seen this? I think he put the house up for sale or something where he lives. You showed me this, I think.
Well, Barry, he had monogrammed front gates, and I don't know what his wife's name is, but her initial is G, or J, so maybe it's Jenny.
PJ.
So it was PJ on the gates, and we were sort of trying to figure out who could buy it, or, you know, it sort of limits...
An ice cream factory. Or
Phil Jagielka.
That's true.
We came up with a list.
Paul Jewell?
Yeah, right, potential purchase. But he has since offloaded it at an enormous loss, I think.
But the carpets all the way through the house had these little kind of monogram things in the centre.
Speaking of Phil Neville, he's been talking to some of the press guys about how he never really felt comfortable at Everton until quite recently, until he scored that penalty against Manchester United. Mm-hmm. And he's still referred to as the Mank in the dressing room, obviously original footballer's name there. But, you know, now he does feel, you know, like he belongs, and he's hoping that he can lead.
I think that tackle on Ronaldo was a turning point in his
reducer
career,
on Ronaldo.
Well, there you go. And do we want to venture a prediction, given that John successfully predicted Burnley to make it up? Barry last night predicted Barcelona. And Sean, you back in our Christmas predictions actually predicted Barcelona win the Champions League. Kevin McCarra went on record on this pod saying that Everton were going to win the FA Cup. Do you think that could possibly be?
When did he say that?
That was way, way back. Third round, says producer Pete. Rob?
Chelsea remind me a lot of Dom Revy's Leeds in that for no particular reason they end up as runners-up. This incredibly powerful team, and they have so many failures, but I can't see it. I think
Gus Hiddink has that about him as well, doesn't he? He's the great semi-finalist.
Yeah, but I just think Everton, they'll miss Arteta badly. A bit like United last night. If they go behind, they've got nowhere to go, and I think the only way they can win it is 0-0 penalties, I think.
Really?
I reckon Everton will win. Like Sean, I don't think it'll be pretty, another dull FA Cup final, but I reckon.
I really hope Everton win.
They do win.
I think
everyone wants them to win, apart from Chelsea fans, obviously, and Liverpool fans.
14 years on from that famous cup triumph. What year was that, Sean?
95, when they beat United 1-0. Poor rideouts.
Yeah,
that was a dire game. It may well be very similar on Saturday.
I just can't see Everton scoring.
I mean, you've got that horrible Wembley pitch, which has got about as much life in it as someone that's been lying in a coffin for several. Oh, I meant to ask you, James. Speaking of the FA Cup coverage, on Satanta, thanks for the lead in. On this Saturday, they're bringing back Satan Greasy.
Now, I'll be on between 11 and 1.
Oh, will you?
Yeah.
Well, Satan Greasy, who...
With Rebecca Lowe, a special kind of FA Cup Football Matters thing, live from Wembley Stadium.
Satan Greasy, who...
Satan Greasy, it's
who,
true.
For listeners who perhaps don't live in the UK, may not be aware of them, but they were a legendary comic duo in the mid 80s to early 90s. They had a show on Saturday
afternoons. They pioneered
afternoons.
The entire
they did. There were two very well
Scusi was an old soak, and Saint was
legendary
sort of
player.
Saint in Saint John. They basically, the shows consist of them making very non-PC gags to each other and also talking about Scottish goalkeepers. And,
yeah.
And I was wondering, you've seen some of the previous stuff, haven't you, James? Is it worth us tuning in for that?
I wouldn't miss it if I were you. I can guarantee you that people are going to be talking about the Saint and Greavesy featurettes. There's three of them, and you won't want to miss any of them. You'll want to come armed on Monday morning with your own comment on their return to TV.
If I was driving my car and while watching it, might I possibly be able to swerve and crash into something?
I'd say if you're watching anything while driving your car, anything on TV, you're probably likely to be involved in an accident.
You're very sage today, Barry. Yeah, I think Barry's spot on there. Now, basically we have Rob saying Everton.
No.
Chelsea. Barry saying Everton. Sean.
I'll be back in 0-1 goals at 2-1, but no.
All right, okay.
Have you considered going to the Sporting Chance Clinic, Sean?
Producer Pete, Everton on Chelsea? Producer Pete says Chelsea 2-0. Excellent. Well, there you go. That was today's Football Weekly Extra. Many, many thanks for joining us for that. Thanks, Producer Pete. Thanks, Barry. Thanks, Ben. And third person there. Yep. And Roger. And you as well, Rob. Thanks for struggling in today. It meant a lot. We'll speak to you on Monday. Bye-bye.